available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 network, sports network. Is that what we do?
It's a sports network. That is. And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
I just saw Ryan adjusting my levels while I was talking, and it threw me off. For you once, know, he actually threw me off.
When we're testing the levels, he'll stand away from the mic, not looking at it. And then when he starts, he'll get really into it. And he just tries to screw with me and screw up the volume.
But you actually messed me up by doing that.
Yeah, pretty good. But I'm Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. It is a sports network. And we are the Podcast of Champions, forming together this team, this bond. We've been doing it for 6-7 years now, talking about Pac-12 football. Who would do that in the middle of May? We will. Who's going to talk about spring football games or practices or showcases in the middle of football? Well, I will. David won't. But that's what we do here on the Podcast of Champions. It's Pac-12 football all year round. And I'm excited, David. It's Cinco de Mayo. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
You didn't bring margaritas, and you brought donuts last week, so I did appreciate that.
Yeah, you offered margaritas, but it is 9 in the morning.
True. But, you know, the best time for a margarita is when you're awake, I guess. I don't know, like anything. Wow. And you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
I'm not a big margarita guy.
I want to make them for you. I make these homemade margaritas. So it's all fresh squeezed juice. And then the simple syrup you make, which is easy, sugar and water. But it's really good.
They give me a harsh, sometimes a heartburn, but like just kind of this harsh feeling in my mouth.
Oh.
Because of the salt, because of the, I don't know. It's just, there's a combination effect that isn't great.
Yeah, I do like the salted rims, but I don't want it over salted. I like the little hint of it. Mm-hmm. We could do sugar for you. You know, you get those like
I think it's also the sugar. Like, and I'm talking like a typical margarita mix, like that sort of crap.
Those are terrible.
Yeah, it's garbage, but it's still fundamentally the same thing. And it just doesn't do it for me.
I'll bring one in homemade. So I do like a ratio of like, I'll cut one orange up and I got a juicer, like squeeze the juice out of it. Not like, it's like a citrus juicer. I'll do one lemon and then a bunch of limes. And it's a great juice mix. You know, the tequila, you want some pretty good tequila. Fortaleza is great. That's a good one. Corralejo, I like that a lot. Mix it up in there, and then, you know, you add a little simple syrup. And I like to don't like stir it. I mix it together because mm-hmm. the syrup can be a little, you know, thick, especially if you, agave is good too. That's really thick. You really got to mix that one up. But man, it's they're tasty. I think they're technically would be sort of like a skinny margarita because you're using fresh juice, but the fresh juice just tastes better to me.
So why not, instead of all of that, just pour a cup, half tequila, half Mountain Dew.
It tastes like shit, that's why. But I know your alcohol always tastes bad. It's just, you're just doing it for the other reasons, I know. But these actually, I think, taste pretty good. Everyone I've made them for has liked them, so you probably won't, but whatever.
Hey.
It's fair. A good mile. I should make some. Anyway, if you want to get a hold of us, you guys got to get a hold of us because we don't have a lot of questions this week. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com.
Actually, you know what this is?
What?
This is Revenge of the Fifth.
Because
it was May the 4th be with you.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Are you a big May the 4th guy?
No.
I watched some of the, I think, what's your least favorite movie? The one where...
Rise of Skywalker. Right,
yeah, like...
Holy shit.
Yeah, I watched, that was like on TBS, and I was like, put it on like before like the NBA playoffs. So it's the one where he's like, they're holding up in that fort and all that, like the whole Rebel Alliance is like, in one room, you know, it's like, it's dumb.
Yep.
It's really dumb. I do kind of like how they kill the bad guy, who's another evil whatever guy. And then I like that when they fight all the red dudes and stuff.
No,
like,
but that's the second movie. That's the good one.
No.
Last Jedi is the good one.
Oh, is that
Rise of Skywalker is the third one in that new sequel series.
So you like that one? But there was parts of that I didn't like either. But there's parts I liked.
Yeah.
But like they bond together and then they just break apart right away. Like, oh, come on, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But whatever. But yeah, may the fourth be with you. Happy Cinco de Mayo, which is not Mexican Independence Day. It's like a Spanish-French war from like 1870-something or whatever.
Hang on. I'm going to look this up.
Yeah. It's, defeating the French, but it wasn't. It's not Mexican.
I know it's like something confusing.
I think it's Spanish-French.
It's the anniversary of Mexico's victory over the French Empire at the Battle of Puebla in 1862. So this was interesting. This was Emperor Napoleon III, I believe, was the Emperor of France at that point. That's all I got.
Yeah, nice. Well,
but I mean that's independence, isn't it?
No, it's a different. I know it's not the 4th of July for Mexico.
No, but they beat up the French who were in charge.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you should know this.
Well, okay, so Mexican Independence Day is celebrated on September 16th, which is commemorating the Cry of Dolores in 1810, which initiated the War of Mexican Independence from Spain. Okay. But then they had to get independent from France too, cuz France was in control for a while.
I don't know if they were in control of the whole thing, though, right? Like, there was...
Dude, I don't know.
They took over... I thought they, like, invaded... I don't know.
All right, so the Battle of Puebla, hang on, was during the Second French Intervention in Mexico. Okay, hang on. The Second French Intervention in Mexico, also known as the Second Franco-Mexican War from 1861 to 1867, was an invasion of Mexico launched in late 1862 by the Second French Empire, which hoped to replace the Mexican Republic with a monarchy favorable to French interests.
Oh. But they didn't do that. They were just...
Right. So here's the interesting part, is the Battle of Puebla was in 1863. That war went on... Or 1862? That war went on for another 5 years.
It's a rough one.
What are we celebrating? Is this like celebrating, I don't know, like the Battle of Saratoga or something? Like, what are we doing?
We've gone on
Mexico,
a lot.
I want answers.
All right. For all of our Mexican friends. I do have like... three people of Mexican descent on my staff. I will talk, but you know,
can you get me some answers? Gerard, I want answers.
Unfortunately, like they don't really know much. Like I try to, I think I know more about Mexico than they do. So that's kind of terrible, but
yeah,
whatever. But yeah, they're great. They're great people. We'll talk to them. We're going to talk to them about the Cinco de Mayo stuff. Like I said, don't have a lot of questions today. We got like one voicemail and an email. You can email us Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. That's 678 right in a row. Look at that. We planned that, I think, when we got that Google Voice number. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast. Lots of tweets been going on. Website, Pac-12podcast.com. You can go over and find us on Reddit, Podcast of Champions, and then wherever you can subscribe to the podcast, all the podcasting platforms, especially Apple Podcasts. Follow us there. Rate us with 5 stars. Then talk your trash. Someone broke the rules, I think you mentioned on Twitter. Good trash talk, only 1 star.
Which, yeah.
That's not how we
do it. It's because it was heartfelt trash talk. You know, we occasionally get loving trash talk, but this was from a guy I blocked on Twitter, and so he was upset. And so he did that not only on the POC, but he also did it on the broadcast.
He gave you a 1 star.
He gave a 1 star review. And look, that's beyond the pale. You can say whatever you want.
You blocked him.
I blocked him, you know, because that's something I do on occasion.
And then he got upset.
And then he got mad.
So wait, I got blowback for you blocking this guy.
Uh-huh.
My podcast.
He got big mad. He got big mad about getting blocked.
If he did it to the Parastyle podcast, I mean, he's a Bruin fan though, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So he probably didn't do that to me. But if he did that to mine.
Yeah. It's invariably politics. Like, it's always politics with these people.
Yeah.
Because I block them for the politics stuff, and then they get angry and post on our,
gotcha,
our reviews.
Nice. Well, try not to do that, because I don't want, you know, my livelihood is tied up in this.
No, but it always makes for a good tweet.
That's good, too. It does make for a good tweet. All right. So we said happy Cinco de Mayo. We also, and you know, there's certain people you follow on Twitter for certain things. Apparently, Brett McMurphy is our go-to guy for Pac-12 coaches' birthdays, because last week it was It was Herm Edwards' birthday. Crazy. This week, it's Jed Fish's birthday. So Brett tweeted, happy birthday to Arizona's Jed Fish, who turns 46 today. Fish is the fifth youngest Pac-12 head coach and 47th youngest overall in the FBS. So happy birthday to Jed Fish.
Happy birthday, Jed. Jed the Fish.
Yeah. Good stuff there. Okay, so what do we got to talk about today? We got to recap a couple of spring games, the last two spring games, but we can start off. I know you hate it.
Yeah, thank God.
With the NFL draft.
Yeah, the best program in the Pac-12 the last few years, UCLA, as expected, had the most NFL draft picks.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. I mean, they've obviously their performance on the field has matched that.
I would say so. That's why Chip got the extension.
Right.
So that's, an extension that didn't quite get to the levels we would have liked, but hopefully this year with another winning record, that extension can be extended. It was weird, like overall in the draft. I was in Vegas for the draft. It was crazy there, like a lot of cool stuff going on. But I would say, like, Cincinnati, 9 draft picks, like only behind LSU and Georgia, who set a record with 15, which is crazy. Texas, none. You know, like stuff like that is just weird. Like Texas has had, you know, top 10 recruiting classes for forever. And to have no draft picks is just kind of weird. And like, and a team like Cincinnati, you know, they made the playoff there undefeated and all that.
Maybe in Texas they should start watering the bamboo a little bit, like old Chipper at UCLA. They water the bamboo. It's a stupid analogy. That's like from, I don't know, some stupid life philosophy crap. But basically, the stupid thing goes: if you water bamboo in the first year, it doesn't grow. If you water it in the second year, it doesn't grow. If you water it in the third year, it doesn't grow. But then the fourth year, you water it, and it grows 15 feet. And it's this really stupid applied analogy that is basically that, oh, don't judge me at all until there's this unexpected success, and then that was the result of all the things I was doing before.
Gotcha.
It's just stupid. It's really dumb, but it's been this constant mantra about Chip Kelly going back to Oregon, but like especially at UCLA.
He had like instant success. Yeah. He watered the damn bamboo. Uh-huh.
No, the bamboo. The bamboo was already sprouting. I guess Mike Bellotti was really watering the shit out of that stuff.
Yeah.
UCLA apparently like they had to plant entirely new structures of bamboo. but anyway. What I'm saying is, Steve Sark, you better plant some bamboo, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they were 5-7.
You think that's the bamboo? Was the bamboo planted?
I think that, you know, you don't water it though. You
bamboo's a really funny word.
It is a funny word.
Like it's bamboo.
It's a funny plant too. Like
yeah, it is really weird.
You use it for different stuff.
Uh huh.
Like shooting darts.
It's weirdly strong.
Yeah, it's strong but hollow.
But hollow.
It's weird.
Yeah.
So you can, the hollowness you can use for things like Rambo can use it to like be underwater.
You can build a raft out of bamboo.
You
can build a
raft. You could use, you know, use it to blow darts.
You can take the shoots and put them up somebody's fingernails to torture them.
Thank you. And just use it as like a cane thing, just whacking people.
Yeah. 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 Oh, yeah. Bamboo cane.
It's like, caning.
And you can also just say it. I mean, it's fun to say. Bamboo. Bamboo.
Sark needs to water some bamboo. No draft picks for Texas. For the Pac-12, so Oregon had the most players in the NFL Combine. They had a bunch, like 1,000 players, whatever, something like that. I don't remember what the exact number was. Hundreds? They had a lot. One player was drafted. So that's another.
But he was drafted fifth.
He was drafted fifth. Not a good ratio, though.
You don't think so?
No, I would say a lot of dudes to Combine, not a lot of guys drafted. It's the lowest amount of players. So the Pac-12 had 25 players drafted total since they expanded to 12. So not ideal. The SEC had 65 players drafted, so 40 more than the Pac-12. Now, they got a couple extra teams, but still, that's a lot. If you go per capita, the SEC had 4.6 picks per school. So that's more than a pick than every other conference. The Big Ten was close, 3.4. The Big 12, not bad, 2.5 picks per school. The Pac-12 had just over 2.1. And the ACC was the worst, 1.5. Clemson falling off has not helped the ACC. So Pac-12, you know, not the bottom, but close to the bottom. Georgia had 15 players, a record. So the whole Pac-12 had 25 and Georgia had 15. That's Georgia and LSU combined beat the Pac-12.
Sounds right.
Yeah, seems like it.
So you know who beat LSU last year?
UCLA.
And those, you know, Bruins, baby.
And that, so the Bruins actually overachieved because LSU had like 12 picks or something. I forget what it was.
Well, like I was saying about the bamboo.
Yeah, they're I don't know what they're doing there. They were slashing. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. The bamboo analogy for LSU.
They were clearing forests.
But they had double digit draft picks and lost UCLA. UCLA had 6, so overachieving because they didn't have as many draft picks as LSU.
Exactly.
So really impressive. Like I think we should call Martin Jarman right now, add a couple years on, and so a couple mils to Chip's contract. But 6 picks, the highest in the Pac-12 overall. Washington and Arizona State tied with 4. USC had 3. Cal had 2. Washington State also had 2. Stanford with 1. Oregon State with 1. Oregon had 1. And Utah had 1. Who do you think didn't have any picks? Would you, if you had to guess? Your destination is on the right. What are you? You have your directions going on.
What was that?
Did you not know how to get to the office or what's my studio here?
I don't think that was my phone.
It definitely was your phone.
No, I don't have my map up.
Oh, that looks like a map you're showing me.
No, it's my map, but I don't have directions up.
Anyway, who are the losers? Arizona and Colorado. They were two of a handful of Power 5 programs that didn't produce a single draft pick. Texas, like we mentioned, was included in that. The Wildcats were shut out for the 5th time in the last decade. But Jed Fish, whose birthday is today, I don't know if you mentioned, did we talk about this, his birthday? I don't remember. That was like 10 minutes ago. Is his birthday? He said never again. He tweeted out never again.
Never again.
Which, you know, that's one of those things, like you go to like Auschwitz or something and like there's signs that say like never again. It's like sort of this like, it's like simple and it's like, hey, let's not really let this shit happen again. So it seems a little too, I don't know what the word I'm looking for.
Maybe it's a little too much like trying to take out an anthill with a bomb.
Yeah, sort of like, you know, I guess like you could say something like, hey, we're not, you know, trust me, this is the last time that's going to happen I'm around. Never again just sounds very like, you know, prophetic. Like you're just like, oh my God, like this is like, we're going to prevent this tragedy from ever occurring again.
Right. And like Oregon was like one player away from it happening to them. And they like are winning Rose Bowls and stuff. Like shit happens.
Yeah. But the fact it doesn't happen 5 times in a decade, that's pretty bad.
Right. But never again is a bit strong.
Yeah.
Jed.
But that's okay. You know, Jed, I like the direction Jed's going. I did DK and PK at the Utah radio. So I did them this morning, like before I came here, and it was funny talking about it. You know, we talk about the Pac-12 South a lot, but you know, it's Arizona's one of those teams that's like, I'm bullish on Arizona. But the problem is bullish on Arizona this year is probably 3 or 4 wins, you know, like, which is fine, but like the schedule's tough. But he's rebuilding that roster. And you know, maybe they surprise people. Would you be shocked like if they went like 6-6 and went to a bowl?
God no.
But I just think the reasonable expectations are like 3 or 4.
I think there's a new paradigm that we're going to have to contend with, which is the heavy transfer market, making it so that turnarounds happen a lot quicker than they used to.
Yeah.
Because you bring in like a proven Pac-12 level quarterback, which they did, and then several Pac-12 level players at key spots in the transfer market, they might be suddenly like decent. Because we're
the Pac-12, you could beat people if you're decent.
Like if you were relying entirely on high school recruiting to do it, then yeah, there's this like, you know, ramp up, right? Where they go from 1 win to 4 wins or whatever. But if you're adding a bunch of Pac-12 level players just overnight who already have the experience, I mean, it could be 6 wins, could be 7 wins. I don't know. I mean, they could be suddenly pretty good. I don't think they will be. I think they've still got a lot of spots that they need to get some, I mean, just development beyond anything else. But it wouldn't be the shocker of all shockers because the Pac-12 is pretty bad and it's going to be pretty bad again this year.
Yeah. No, I get it. All right. Well, We have two Pac-12 spring games left. The first one we're going to talk about is
California Golden Bears.
Cal.
Okay.
Some people are bullish on Cal.
Who?
People.
But which people?
Top.
Yogi?
People.
Okay, top, yeah. Top men.
Yogi's bullish on everybody. He did this game with Roxy Bernstein, who's a Cal grad. top men.
Is that what that's Indiana Jones?
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Because when they're like, it's at the end.
Top men.
Yeah, because he's like, what are you doing with the Ark? We have to, he's like, it is like, who top men? Like, who's studying the Ark? And they put it in a box and stick it in a warehouse. They're like, okay, we're done. Which is great. That's one of the great.
It's so good. It's, I love when you like watch these things as like an adult too, and you're like, oh, that's actually a really good sight gag. Like, yeah. It's really funny that it ends that way.
It's pretty good. Okay, so this was a spring showcase. Beautiful day out there. They actually had a nice turnout. Like, I don't know what the attendance was, but if you looked in the crowd, like, people were there. People were kind of happy. A lot of talk about the Bears losing five games by one score or less. You know, they were like essentially five plays away from 10 wins. Did you buy it? You buy it? 5 plays away from 10 wins?
Sorry, what?
They lost five games by one score or less. So I think Justin Wilcox said, or maybe it was Yogi, you're 5 plays away. So if you scored an extra touchdown in all those games, one play, you're a 10-win team. Mm. So 5 plays away from 10 wins. Interesting way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
We should get Gorsy on it and talk about that, you know, the 10-11 wins. But anyway, Jack Plummer, the Purdue transfer, he looked pretty good out there.
You almost hit him with a Jake Plummer. That would have been loading him up with some real expectations.
That is. He's probably going to be the starter. They got Xavier Carlton, the defensive end from Utah, and Jackson Sermon, who didn't play, the linebacker. He was Washington's leading tackler. He comes to Cal, so we didn't get to see him, but you know, I think their defense is going to be pretty good. He said that Wilcox said that there's a lot of guys taking big leaps forward. He feels good about the talent. There's going to be a lot of new starters, but he felt like Plummer picked things up really quickly. A lot of talent receiver, just not a lot of experience. The guy you're going to watch for is Brett Johnson. Do you remember him? So,
yes.
A year ago in the spring game, I think it was a scooter accident. He got in some weird scooter accident. And it was like broke his hip. But he's back now. He's got this glorious handlebar mustache. Mm-hmm. He was down there with, like, on the sideline with DeSean Jackson, showing two guys that have some swagger. He had some swagger. He did a really good interview. But he's back. Looks like he hasn't missed a beat. He said he's close to 100%. They're talking about being the best front seven, you know, in the Pac-12. So they're pretty bullish on this defense. And I think I'm with them with that. Like, getting Johnson back is going to be a big deal. Bringing in Jackson Sermon, tackling machine, like, I think the defense is going to be pretty good for Cal. Well, they've always been pretty good, but, you know.
Did you just name a coach's kid as the number two player in that litany there?
I don't know if he's the number two player, but he was Washington's leading tackler.
Uh-huh.
That's something, right?
Hey, was Washington good last year?
I mean, Seattle's beautiful.
Okay. Yeah. Was his dad a coach there, too?
He was, yes.
Was his dad a coach there when he was recruited there?
Yes, I think he was.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So you're not high on... Okay,
I'm not high on any coaches' kids.
Kai Milner is probably the backup quarterback. Plummer, they do project as the favorite. But Wilcox praised both those guys after the game. This was a weird one. So all the production, all the games have like a different feel to them. As far as like how the... It's like... There's not like a formula. Like the Pac-12 did 11 of the 12 games. The ESPN did USC's. There wasn't like a formula of how this is going to be done. Like, all of them felt like there was like a back of the napkin. Like, listen, what do you do this? They like were interviewing like everybody. Like, there was all these weird interviews. Like, the first, like, and there was like 15 minutes of it dedicated to the play, you know, the Cal Stanford game, like the NR. So they interviewed like the voice of the play, the TV announcer, the guy that ran the touchdown in and stomped on the trombone player. There was all these weird sort of interviews that really, and I feel like the game was going on and they weren't really talking about the players. Like, I wasn't learning as much in this one about, it was more just sort of like, there was like history and talking. Like, the Brett Johnson interview was cool. And you know, hear from Wilcox, that's fine. But they just sort of were like, it was like almost like they were filling time the entire time with all these interviews that were sort of like, I don't know what we're doing here.
I think it's because they heard Showcase and they're like, oh shit, this is going to be like that UCLA thing. We've got to get this. We got
to
get
it. It wasn't
this
to that level.
Interviews.
It wasn't to that level. Yeah. There's actually some game stuff going on, but I feel like I didn't, if you know, I'm not like watching, like, I know we joke, I'm not watching this intently. I'm usually like doing something else. I'm watching the spring game that's on TV, but like they weren't ever talking about it. So like there'd be plays happening and I like didn't really see, because like they're not talking about what's happening in the game. They're like interviewing some guy about the 40 years ago play. It was 40 years ago, by the way.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
I guess. Oh, yeah. Wow. Shit.
I guess the guy that scored, I forget his name, the guy that scored the touchdown. So he had the ball more than once. And that was like a crazy game, like John Elway's, you know, last game and all this stuff. And, you know, they kick a field goal at the very end. And that's why you had to do the, you know, but they were talking a lot about the game. But he, you know, spiked it on the trombone player. And I guess they've become friends and they'll like do speaking engagements together and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. You're really into this.
Maybe they should record a podcast.
They should. DeSean Jackson was there. Okay, I have a confession to make.
Okay, confess.
Here, first of all, we have to talk about
Washington Huskies.
So, because I was in Vegas, I forgot to record.
Wait, I'm sorry. What?
I didn't record.
What are you trying to tell us?
So, and I didn't remember to record it until later. So, this didn't record until.
And you didn't check with me, making sure that we had coverage.
I assumed you watched it because you've watched all of these. So I do have it recorded now, but it wasn't recorded until like last night. I haven't got a chance to watch it.
You didn't have a chance to watch it. You knew we were recording today, and you still said, my main beat. I am responsible for the spring games. I have dedicated myself to this. I fought Dave off because Dave wanted to do this, but I said, no, I want to do it. You had it recorded last night, and yet still, you didn't put in, what, the extra hour and a half of work to try to watch that?
I was up kind of late. Had some drinks, maybe. And I had to get up early. So, no, I didn't do that. I was at the gym early this morning.
I confess to being both mad and disappointed.
Just for you, we'll talk about this game next week then. If we can extend the spring game talk. Would that?
No, please. Please get it over with.
Okay. So, this was a spring preview. Thanks to our guys at Dogman. I'll talk about some of the stuff they told me. 70 to 80 play scrimmage. The offense ended up winning 34-29. I won't make any more Vegas line jokes because I've done that a few times. So they have like weird quarterback thing going on. Michael Penix Jr., he got the first.
So series. We're going Penix, right?
Huh?
We're going Penix?
I kind of think so.
You don't want to go Penix?
Oh, I think it's Penix. But we could go
but
Penix.
But you don't want to go Penix?
You definitely want to go Penix. Sam Heward, he had the second series. He looked like his numbers were good. He was 12 for 19, 167 yards and a touchdown. I talked to Chris Fetters a little bit. He says that was his best practice so far. So apparently, he's the former five-star, son of not a son of a coach, but son of a player. You know, is that okay for you, Sam Heward? Son of like, you know, legendary Washington player?
Yeah, I'll take it.
Former five-star. Apparently, he didn't have the best spring, but he had a really good spring game. Fetters thinks the other two guys are ahead of him. So Penix and then Dylan Morris.
Penix.
So I think that's where you're kind of watching.
I'm sorry. You buried the lead there. Dylan Morris is still ahead of Heward?
This is not official. This was
I am my buddy out, Fetters. I am out on the Kalen DeBoer era.
Well, maybe Seward
and Penix.
Can we just be Seward? Yeah, I like Seward. So Seward just got it late.
Actually, until he gets out of the third string, he is Seward.
Okay. You got to move up. Yeah. So I'm sorry, that's about all I
he's
got.
He's been Seward.
Yeah.
You like that?
He's been Seward.
Yeah, he's been Seward.
Yeah. I don't know. Washington's got some work to do. I'm a DeBoer fan. I like DeBoer. I think they're going to be, you know, just coached much better than what we saw for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
What will that translate to? I don't know. That's why I think people are kind of bullish on Cal, because, you know, Oregon's got the transition. You know, Oregon State's sort of been like this steady, we're good at home, we suck on the road. Stanford's absolute butt, as we know. You know, Washington State's going through a transition that, you know, maybe a little more stability just because Dickert's still there. But, like, is there a world that Cal can win the North in your mind? Is that possible?
I mean, sure, anything's possible.
Yeah. I mean, Oregon's got the best roster, but I don't know. Dan Lanning's never been a head coach. Like, there's some questions.
Lan Danning.
You're getting mad at me for this. You're the one that said this.
I mean, just get it consistent, all right?
Yeah.
Just mistake after mistake today.
It's more wide open in the North, for sure, to me. The South, you got like two absolute garbage teams.
So here's I think the entire league has potential to be a trash panda except for Utah. Like, I think Utah's good. Everyone else, like, Oregon could be bad. Like, Lan Danning could be, like, not the answer. The offensive coordinator they hired who sucks, he could still suck. Like, there's a lot of things that could happen with Oregon. I mean, I don't think they're going to be bad, but they could be, like, 7-5 or 8-4. And everyone else has the potential. Like, we went through it, and I don't think it's outlandish to think that USC could go, like, 6-6. Like, it could happen. It's not crazy.
Yeah.
And everyone else, like, I mean, here's the thing. UCLA, not to talk about the Bruins, because you know how much pain it brings me.
Yes.
Their schedule is so bad, like, it's so bad that they're going to have a hard time not going 8-4 at minimum.
Right.
But it has the potential to be a bad league next year. Like, pretty, like, maybe the worst it's been. North is wide open, and the South, aside from Utah, I mean, I think it's going to be a weird and wild season of a bunch of irrelevant games, because I think everyone's going to be bad again except for Utah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Can UCLA take that next step and get 9 wins 10 wins? Chip Kelly era powers through. Lincoln Riley, how many more players can he add? What were your thoughts on the Jordan Addison thing? So, if you don't like,
I think I shared my thoughts.
The Biletnikoff winner, Jordan Addison, from Pitt.
We haven't talked about a couple of things with USC. First, they landed Eric Gentry, which was at the end of last week after we recorded.
Yeah, the freshman All-American linebacker from Arizona State.
Yeah, who's, like, I think next year going to be one of the best linebackers in the country.
He's going to USC now.
Yeah, he's going to USC now. And then Jordan Addison, like, soon thereafter, was reported that he hasn't yet, but he will enter the transfer portal. And somehow we already know his preferred destination is USC.
Yeah, well, that was the report. And then, so Pitt coaches were not very happy. He has now entered the transfer portal, but he hasn't made a decision.
Mm-hmm.
He
grew How much up, time do you think he'll give it before he decides for USC to make it look okay?
I'll give you my thoughts on this. So he's friends with Caleb Williams, the quarterback. They're both from Washington, D.C., the DMV area. So they grew up playing football or whatever together. So they've known each other for a while. The Pitt coaches were pissed. They accused USC of tampering. Pat Narduzzi called Lincoln Riley a couple of times talking about this. It became out there was something that there was like a $3 million payday or something like that for Addison. Here's the thing, and I'll give you like the honest thoughts about this shit, because people say, so I did the Utah radio. They're like, oh, they're buying players. I'm like, you're giving USC too much credit. Like, they don't even have a collective yet. Like, they're not that well organized. They're sort of like in a great spot. It's like the Lakers, when even though they're in turmoil, free agents want to come to the Lakers. They don't want to go to Utah. You know, Utah's got to like get the right coach, draft the right players, develop them. And, you know, they're not going to sign Anthony Davis. They're not going to sign LeBron James. The Lakers can. USC, there's people who just want to go there. Like, if you're Jordan Addison, and here's what happens. You lose your quarterback, the only first-round quarterback in the draft this year. You lose your receivers coach. You lose your offensive coordinator. All those guys are gone. You're like, I want to go somewhere else. Where would you go? Like, if you didn't know Caleb Williams, if nobody talked to you, you're like, okay, Alabama's got
and
Bryce Young.
And you've experienced the city of Pittsburgh in a fall and winter. over and over again.
Literally, if no one at USC ever said a word to him, he would be calling USC and go just to be asking about. Like, so the tampering stuff to me is absolute crap.
And who he's looking at. Like, think about who he's looking at. It's a bunch of SEC schools, and it's USC. All of that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, not tampering. That's just, oh, yeah, I want to go to a program that first has a chance to win a lot next year. And second, I want to go someplace where it's not fucking Pittsburgh in the winter. Like, you lost everyone.
Your position coach left for somewhere else for more money. Your offensive coordinator left for somewhere else for more money. Your quarterback, who like didn't really have great years early, then had a huge year this last year. And the big reason why you caught 100 balls, he's gone to the NFL, the only first round pick. The people are getting on him. You know, that's USC can do some weird shit. You're giving them too much credit. They don't even have a collective. They don't have the organization to like put some package together with $3 million in a house to try to get some kid to come there. They just kids want to go there because it's freaking LA and they got the hot coach right now. I mean, that's my little soapbox thing. So
yes,
does that sound USC homer?
No. I tend to agree. Now, might they have tampered? Who knows?
Very possibly
could have. Like, I think everyone is tampering at some level.
Your best chance to get him would have been Caleb Williams to talk to him.
Right. Like, and that's in a gray area.
If Lincoln Riley wanted to call him, I think Caleb Williams would go, no, let me do it. Like, I know him. Like, the smartest path to try to get him to come to USC wasn't for Lincoln Riley to call him, would be for Caleb Williams to call him. You know, tampering wouldn't even have helped. Like, it would have been better to do it the legal way with Caleb Williams, his childhood friend, to call him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's anyway, USC continues to add some players. It's really disappointing to watch happen.
The Death Star is being
it's just really disappointing to watch happen, especially because it's just setting you guys up for such a fall. It's so sad. You know, you guys are going to load up all these players and that defense is still going to be big ass, and
see, it's funny, like watching the defensive front, I think they're going to be actually all right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I like Romello Height,
mm-hmm.
the kid from Auburn that came in.
Mm-hmm.
Tuli Tuli Pelotu is a potential like all Pac-12 mm-hmm. dude. His brother Marlon played at SC. I don't know. We'll see. Brandon Peely's coming back. Defense could still be asked.
I'm not liking the way you're sounded, because you're sounding like, oh, we'll see. And then you're like, yeah, when they go 11-1. Yeah, I guess we saw.
That's kind of what it's going to be.
Yeah.
I could be as pessimistic about them as anybody. I usually am. I get a feeling like the Pac-12 is just not that good. They're adding players. To see competent leadership is like very weird. I'm like, damn. Now, I don't know if the defense is going to be good, because there's questions about Grinch and, you know, I'm with you. Like, I don't know. But I think the offense is going to be really good, and that's probably enough to win a whole bunch of games in the Pac-12, you know?
Yep. I've watched this league.
Yeah, we've seen it a bunch. So speaking of Arizona State, Chris Cartman did a podcast. I listened to the whole thing. It was like an hour long. This is funny. Okay, we already mentioned our buddy Fetters. You know, like when we have Fetters on, you know, we could ask like three questions and we're going to get like 30 minutes worth of answers. This was the Sun Devil Source podcast. I forget his co-host, the host of it. I think it was an hour long. I think there were four questions. Like Cartman was going off.
He's heated right now.
And I didn't feel like it was super emotional, but he just said everything that was on his mind. And there was always smart, like always mentioning players and what this guy was doing, what this guy was doing. You should go listen to it. Check it out. So the latest guys, you know, Jermaine Lele, the star defensive tackle, he's in the portal.
Has USC contacted him yet?
There hasn't been any rumors of that yet, but you would assume that's someone that, you know.
Because that's somebody who could help.
Yes. I mean, he would help anybody.
Yeah, but
he's like an absolute stud. And the other guy, what's it, Lott? I forget his name.
He went back. He announced yesterday that he's back.
He's going
to
back
ASU.
Into the portal. Yeah. Okay.
No, he's going back to ASU.
Okay, good. Yeah, so that's good. But Lole missed the season because of injury. But he had 96 tackles and 8 sacks in 17 games. So he's a big one. So if someone can nab him, that's, you know. But for Arizona State, it's tough when you lose talent like Gentry, but it's also tough when you lose it to a division rival. This is an offense that they would like to run like 10 receivers or something. Right now they have five. They've lost 5 receivers. There's 4 scholarship receivers on the roster. That's not good. They have one scholarship receiver that's a former walk-on, so you could say 5. They actually have more tight ends than they have receivers. From last year, they had half their starters were seniors, so a bunch of guys lost. Five or six more starters were lost to the portal. So they're replacing like 16 starters from last year's team. And from according to Cartman, they got to replace. So if you took your best like 35 to 40 players, you're replacing like in the low 20s of them. So like well more than half of your best, you know, like you're too deep essentially. More than half of them are gone. He said that's the first time he's ever seen that happen. But like NIL was an issue. But the investigation is the bigger one. And, you know, he's talking about some of the issues of why players would leave. And sometimes you're making the excuse like, oh, it's NIL. It's this investigation. And like you said, the best time to fire Herm Edwards was months ago. The second best time is right now. Everybody knows that. Like, it's hard to retain people when you know the head coach is on the thinnest of thin ice.
It's not even that. He's a dead man walking.
Yeah.
If you can't, so one sign of it is when you can't recruit anymore. And I think they're showing that. They had a horrible cycle last cycle. And I don't think this one's shaping up to be a whole lot better. And the other sign, and maybe the more critical sign, is when you can't even retain your own players. If guys are jumping like this, and now we've seen a full, two cycles of the transfer portal being a real thing, this is rare. This is rare at the Power 5 level,
yeah,
where guys are jumping ship at this rate. You see a trickle, you see guys leave, but they're not balancing it out. Like, it's not like they're getting a bunch of incoming guys. They're just losing dudes constantly. And when you see that, even in this era of free transfers and the whole thing, that's a rarity. That's when things are going horribly, because these guys, I mean, think about you and your life. If you got a job offer, let's throw NIL in there as like basically a job offer that
okay.
gives you a substantial amount of money more, but you have to move. Like, you've got to move like several states away from your entire comfort zone, away from all your friends and family or whatever it is. You have to sit there and think about it.
Sure.
And if all these guys are making that decision, whether or not it's NIL related, they're making it because their current situation is effed up, not because it's such a better offer over there. Like, I'm sure it is, but the fundamental underlying fact is that your current situation is effed up. That's the only reason you would move, because, I mean, they're people. These are all people, and it's not like we're talking about millions and millions of dollars. We're talking about, oh, they can go to that school and maybe make $60,000 a year.
Yeah.
Is that enough to, I mean, because these guys are all on full scholarship, meaning they get their housing paid for, they get all this stuff paid for. So it's a question of, okay, the pocket money, I can go to there. And yeah, I'm talking about $60,000 if it's pocket money, but also at ASU, I'm sure they can get something. It's not 60 grand maybe, but it's something.
Yeah.
It's because ASU is dysfunctional. And so ASU needs to figure that out. And the way to figure that out is to fire literally everyone under the president.
Yeah.
Ray Anderson needs to go and Herm Edwards needs to go.
Yes.
Because that's just, you can't look at this as anything other than these guys leaving because the program is dysfunctional.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. It's extremely dysfunctional, and it's hard to, that's what was weird. Like, watching the spring game, there was this kind of sense of like, okay, things are settled now and there's like a sense of community, but obviously that's not the case, and we've seen more people depart. So maybe you're putting on the brave face and hoping things get better, but it's just that environment. I mean, I've seen it was around USC. Clay Helton for years was like on the verge of being fired, and that weighs on you as a player. It's not a great situation, and you feel bad for everyone involved. You feel bad for the fans and all that, but I don't see this being anything but a disaster like right now. So, yeah, we'll talk about Arizona State a little bit more in a minute. You mentioned Ray Anderson. The Pac-12 Springs meetings were going on in Arizona. That's the other thing. It's not like you're living in Fargo, North Dakota. If you want to leave, like, it's really easy to get the hell out of there, because like, oh, I don't know. Like, you're leaving like a paradise, essentially. Like, you're leaving, you know, Scottsdale, Arizona, or whatever. You know, you're in Tempe.
Are you calling a place that gets to, I think, 115 degrees in the summer paradise? Because I think that's actually closer to the other thing.
It's pretty awesome, though.
Isn't it closer to the other thing, though? You know, the other thing you believe in? The hot place, isn't it?
I love Arizona, so I don't know. It's not, a lot of people love it there. Uh-huh. It's growing like
crazy.
Do
people die there every summer because of the actual just like base weather?
Yes.
Yes.
That is true. Okay, the Pac-12 spring meetings are going on. Will Nevers reporting on it. Bruce Feldman did some reports on this and stuff. And there's also like, it's also kind of like a national meeting. The SEC teams were involved, but a lot of the other Power Five conferences were. So conference executives, athletic directors, head coaches. So there's a lot of people in Scottsdale, expensive hotel. Like it's all, you know, so if you want to talk about like hypocrisy, like, oh, we're worried about paying these players and they're going to stay at these $500 a night suites there and having a blast in Scottsdale, playing some golf and all that stuff. So Wilner talked about not expecting a whole lot coming from this because any kind of big change, you need presidential approval, like if they were going to switch to 8 games instead of 9, things like that. The division thing, they might get rid of that. That's something they could talk about. The weird thing is, you know, we talk about divisions going away a lot, but the NCAA put a thing in there where it says, like, to make, you know, for a conference championship game, you have to have divisions. So I think the NCAA would actually have to be the first move where you, and it probably wouldn't be that hard. You're like, hey, we're going to get rid of divisions and still have a championship game. So you do that. Doesn't think that 8 games are going to happen unless the Big Ten does it. So the Pac-12 will follow there. But Bruce Feldman talked to different coaches that were there from the Pac-12. I guess Rick George, the athletic director at Colorado, was a pretty big proponent of, you know, some more like guardrail kind of things. I guess he was talking about this before it went live, so it's not like hindsight. Like the NCAA didn't do anything. I don't know what you can really do now. But the funniest quip was he talked to like 3 different coaches, and apparently Ray Anderson, the Arizona State athletic director, gets up in front of the room and like starts, you know, talking about we got to take care of this cheating, and we have to do it at the conference level. Like really, like we have to clean this up. And everyone's like, are you really getting up there? The guy under NCAA investigations, like level 1 investigations, like you are the school being investigated. You are the one that has all this cheating turmoil around you. And you're on your soapbox talking about we have to stop this cheating. Like, so that was just like baffling to me that he would do that. And another reason why the best time to fire Ray Anderson was 3 months ago and the second best time would be today.
Yeah. Ray Anderson having the self-awareness of, I don't know, having zero self-awareness, it really kind of true to form there.
Yeah. So Bruce tweeted, there's a moment noted by several coaches in the room Tuesday when Arizona State Athletic Director Ray Anderson took the floor to passionately discuss rule breakers, which multiple sources said was dripping with irony as his football program is in the midst of a full-blown recruiting scandal involving Herm Edwards, and his staff has cost numerous Sun Devil coaches their jobs. The quote is, Ray going on a soapbox like that was really something to see. And it was so bizarre. I'm thinking, oh my God, is he really going there? So pretty funny. Like, how do you get, like, this is the Pac-12. Like, this is where we are. That's just, yeah, I don't know. But I thought that was a really funny one.
Yeah.
I think that's all I got.
Well, the great thing is, while we vamped for an hour, we got another question.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Well, why don't we take a quick break and we got a couple questions to get to. Back in a minute. All right. We're back here on the podcast of champions. I told this to David before, we went on air. Like, I was recording the Peristyle podcast and we do a little video aspect of it. The thing we were going to talk about here that I'm sure David set up the YouTube channel by now. And I introduced the show as the podcast of champions. So, you know, people got on me when I put the Peristyle podcast intro and this one. It's hard to do both. It's hard to keep.
Did anyone notice? Did anyone say anything?
I'll have to look. I'll look on the channel and see if anyone said anything. We have a voicemail, though. Do you want to start with that?
I do.
Here we go.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. In addition to the piece that The Athletic did on on Colorado and kind of their historic fall from grace. They also kind of talked about UCLA and Washington. I was wondering if you guys had ever, if you guys had read either of those, and based on where the two programs are at now, I was wondering which of those two could you guys see maybe not necessarily getting back to winning a national championship, but, you know, maybe getting to Rose Bowls and competing more so in the Pac-12. And then, you know, with Condoleezza Rice potentially being mentioned as someone who could replace Mark Emmert at the NCAA, Dave, I just wanted to ask if you had to pick a member, you could only pick a member from George Bush's war cabinet to replace Mark Emmert as NCAA president. Who would you pick? Thanks, guys.
Nice one. Thanks, Perk. What do you got, David?
You got to go Dick, right?
Yeah.
Dick Cheney?
He's a good shot.
Yeah. And I think he would I think he'd bring some real fire to it.
Yeah. I think he would get some stuff done.
Yeah, he would get some stuff done.
You might not like some of the methods, but I think the results would probably be pretty good.
Yeah. 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 I think he'd shoot from the hip a lot.
Good one. What was the first part now that I've heard?
I don't know. Something about the athletic stories, the series, Washington and USC were part of it now.
Oh.
Which ones can get back to Rose Bowl levels, I think what he was saying. I think they both can.
We should have paid attention, I guess.
I think they both can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
I like it.
Yeah. We love you, Perk.
Thanks, Perk. Did we get like a...
Condi keeps getting thrown in here because I think at some point in her history, she professed an interest in sports. Like, I think that's why she's like entirely like in all this stuff. Like, she was a CFP voter for a while. Is she still?
I don't think she is anymore. She was, she was on one of those committees.
Honestly, I mean, not to, you know, not to be ageist. But I think if you're like with many other things, I think if you're going to get a new NCAA president, you want somebody who's like committed to the idea of it as like an ongoing thing, because right now the NCAA has to worry about self-preservation. And in an ideal world, here's what I'll say. I'm not a big NCAA guy, but in an ideal world, there would be an overarching governing body for college football that is strong and powerful and can actually make some rules that will be stuck to. But they can't be arbitrary and they can't be stupid and they can't be rules for rules' sake. And I think the vision required there, you need somebody who's kind of immersed in it, who's probably done it at the college administrative level, but also somebody who's got some verve, who has this as like, I want to do this. I want to make this a big thing. And Condoleezza Rice, first ageist, I'm just prefacing with that. She's 67 years old.
Is she really?
Yeah. And then on top of that, she's already hit her profound career marks. Like, she's already done the things that I'm sure she set out to do. This would be a retirement gig. You don't want somebody taking this as a retirement gig unless the entire point is to basically offload it. And,
right.
And turn
You're
it
riding
in.
Off into the sunset as the NCAA. Yeah. It's ending.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you want to keep it as an ongoing concern, and I think in an ideal world there would be some sort of governing body, and NCAA works, why not? You need somebody who's going to have a vision for that, and it's not going to be Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah. All right. I think we have three questions. Is the meaningless reporting? I don't think we did. We do this last time? I don't think we did.
No. We didn't.
Okay.
Do you want me to do it?
Sure.
Actually, we have one before that.
We do?
Yeah, it's a text message. It was right after our recording.
Okay.
Someone tell Dave he's wrong. Very, very wrong. The Maple Bar and even the Boston Cream are completely standard donuts and should be in the rotation. Since we're on the topic, what do you think is David Shaw's favorite donut? Jed Fish's, Kyle Whittingham's.
Okay.
So all right. He's so exactly first, a Maple Bar is disgusting. So Boston good. Cream, I understand it to be a part of a normal rotation. Cream-filled donuts are also disgusting.
You know what's better? The Maple Bar cream-filled.
Disgusting.
Randy's Donuts has those. They're really good.
Disgusting.
My favorite place in Hermosa used to do the Maple Bar filled with cream. They don't do it anymore. I stopped going.
You're a disgusting and hideous human being.
Perfect.
And I don't know why I'm in the same room as you.
I might go get one.
David Shaw's favorite donut is an old-fashioned.
Yes, 100% is an old-fashioned.
Jed Fish's is a it's like a jelly filled
it's got to be have some flair to it. It's got
it's jelly filled with like funfetti on it and like powdered sugar.
Has that funfetti.
Yeah. Kyle Whittingham seems like
he's a bear claw.
It's yes. There we go. There we go.
Perfect. Let's see. This is Amy, Go Utes Meaningless Reporting. Well, now that you've reported on spring ball for the past few weeks, which David has now convinced me that these games are meaningless, why are you not reporting other meaningless news, like the way too early ESPN rankings? I think there's a difference between meaningless and whatever the ESPN way too early rankings are.
Yeah, those are not, those are, I don't even think they're intended to have meaning.
Right.
I think they're
the
like
spring game, there's
positively
like
nihilistic.
Some intent behind it. But so Utah ranked number 4, USC 12, Oregon 16. Thoughts? I know meaningless at this point. However, I have a couple questions for you. I think we talked about someone, there were some early rankings. I think we mentioned last week and we thought like those were.
Right.
And the 24/7 did a post spring one. So here questions are, why are they putting out the rankings this early? It's before the transfer season is finished.
Ooh, I've got the answer. You want to know why? Because we are all ruled by the content mill.
Right.
That's it. That's it. You have to create content, and what else are you going to write about in April?
Yeah, like they're really coming up with who's going to be the number one player drafted for next
year. I'm writing off-season opponent primers in May for teams that they're going to play in August and September. Why? What's the point?
You got to create content.
Because you got to have content.
Yeah. And people will talk about it. You wrote us talking about it. So, like, if they didn't do that, you wouldn't have wrote us talking about it.
We
don't talk about it. You know.
And hell, we make stories out of the ESPN rankings and we put them up on our goddamn website.
It's like the Simpsons episode where I think it was one of the Halloween ones where the advertising takes over and like the donut guy comes around like smashing things. So, all the advertising things come to life and they start killing people and stuff. And then they make a jingle. They have the jingle guy. Like, the jingle is like, just don't look. So, like, basically, if you don't look at it, then they'll go away. Like all the smashing and stuff will stop. So if you stop talking about the way too early rankings and nobody ever responded, they would stop doing them. But you're going to respond negatively, positively, and they're going to keep doing them.
Well, and so Ryan is somewhat correct, but somewhat incorrect, because there is a reality, too, where this isn't just purely ROI driven. There is an element where we are just creating content. We are just filling these websites up with stuff that's new, because for ESPN's purposes, the writer who makes that, he's got a boss telling him, hey, you got to create some content.
Yeah.
And yeah, they may or may not track the traffic, but I think anything that says like, oh, wow, they must do great numbers on this, you're really overestimating the amount of people who actually even understand how to look at Google Analytics. They don't. You just got to hit a number. It's like any other job. You got to get something produced. Doesn't matter if it's actually linked to anything of value. Maybe sometimes, but not really.
Yeah. All right. Number 2, is it preferable to see Utah rank so high? That's a lot of expectations for a team, or is it preferable to have them work their way up? I mean, I guess it depends on where you're.
I don't think this stuff matters. Like yeah. Whether or not they're ranked high, I don't think the expectations really matter.
I mean, it can. We've seen it, you know, repeating champions, it's tougher. You know, it's tough to have the target on your back as opposed to the team that never broke through. Now you're the team that
broke
through.
I think that's anecdotal. I don't know that it's proven. And
it's proven.
I think it's hard to go through if you're talking about back to back.
I'm gonna whiteboard it for you.
I think it's hard to go through 24 games where you're only losing a couple. So I think, yeah, it's hard to repeat because it's hard to win that many games.
Yeah. Okay, and then 3, is it better for Utah's program and thus the conference for Utah to win the Rose Bowl or lose in the playoff games?
I think at this point, get to a playoff, Utah, because
yes.
I think Utah, I don't think they have the whatever the blue chip ratio is to actually win the title, but I think they are the kind of structured team that could upset that. Like, I think there's a few programs throughout the country who could finally put Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio to the test. A program structured like Utah, where it's just been this level of intense consistency for so many years, where they're finally upgrading the talent at certain spots, maybe they're one that's able to get over the top to an extent.
Yeah.
Because they are so well coached and they are so consistent, and the program itself is sort of I don't know. It's almost self-aware at this point.
Yeah. Okay. And then as a side note, I was listening to last week's episode and boy, were the swear words flying. Swear words. I like that. I only noticed because I was listening in my classroom after school and had to apologize for all the foul language to my students. I've learned my lesson. Thanks for always making me laugh. Go Utes, from Amy.
Yeah, I think I've been wilding out a little bit on the swears.
Yeah, there's certain days, you know. I think last week you did a bunch. But Amy, why would you listen to our show like not on headphones in your classroom? Like, what are you teaching?
I mean,
the
I think you could. I think you could have stopped that question after the first like six words there.
Why are you listening to our podcast? But yes, I would not listen to it.
I would not listen to it. Correct. I actually never have.
Nice.
This is from Frank in Sacramento. You guys need toilet paper? Actually, interestingly enough, I did defile Ryan's toilet in the office here just before we started recording.
So maybe you should send us some toilet paper.
No, Frank. But Ryan, so this is an office. So I'm going to give you a sense of where we're doing this.
Okay.
We are in an office building. It's not an office building. It's a storage facility, but there are offices attached to it. It overlooks what I can only believe to be a water treatment plant with sewage in the water out here.
It's not water treatment. It's a reserve power plant for the power grid. So basically, when there's overflow, this thing fires up, which happens like almost never.
So let me just be clear. There's a pool of brown water directly outside of Ryan's office that we look over.
I think
over.
It's greener right now.
It's beautiful.
The ocean's right behind it.
The office itself has one room, which is the recording studio, where Ryan occasionally opens up the blinds to let the sun shine in. And on those days, this part of the office, I think, gets to about 97 degrees. Behind that is another room. This room is the, I would say, filming area, a few other things. But it also includes a bathroom. Now, that bathroom... here's the thing. So this is an office where, what do you guys spend? Like a couple hours a day, tops?
Yeah.
It's the most well-stocked bathroom I've ever seen in my life. He has about 8 rolls of toilet paper, just spare toilet paper in there. There's all kinds of like smell goods. It's beautiful. It's well done.
I try to clean it. I haven't cleaned it for a little while, but
like there's a bookshelf in here. Like this is more well-appointed than like my house. It's just, anyway, just thought I'd take people behind the curtain a little bit.
Do you remember when we first started doing the podcast? We drove to like the Fox lot or whatever.
Yes.
That was fun. Like Scout had like a little studio or some offices in there. And then
you would bring all your crap and we would have to like literally plug into your soundboard there.
Yes. That was a pain in the butt. We had key cards like to get into the building.
You had a key card. I still parked on the street.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess membership has its privileges. I don't know. What was the thing? Yeah. Why did I have one and you didn't have one?
Who knows?
But anyway, the toilet paper has a picture of Urban Meyer on it.
Yeah.
I guess that was the point of that.
Yep. Okay. Then we got one last one. I'll read this one because that one was short.
Okay.
Struggling ASU fan. This is from Clay in Phoenix. Hi, guys. I've been meaning to email in for a while with something like create the ultimate Pac-12 road trip for 2022. I even started making spreadsheets with best games and matchups, but with each passing week, and I feel my interest with ASU and college football being crushed.
Oh.
We all knew with the recruiting scandal, it would likely send ASU into a rough patch for a few years, but usually with a decent new coaching staff, it doesn't take too long to drum up interest in the program and be competitive again in the Pac-12. However, with what we have seen so far with NIL, I am worried that could be a thing of the past. Reading that Eric Gentry got high to mid six figures, I had mixed feelings. It made me really happy for him and college players in general. That honestly does not seem out of the line for a player that was a freshman All-American. If anything, it might be a little low. But it also crushed my hopes when thinking about the future of college football. Pitt losing Addison is a real wake-up call that even in the Power 5, there's going to be a huge disparity from the haves and have-nots. For about the past 10 years, my interest in college football outside of the Pac-12 has really dwindled, but my love of Pac-12 has grown with how competitive it usually is. I love that it only took 8 years for every team in the South to win it. Even with just the hiring of Lincoln Riley, it still felt that there was going to be a lot of work for USC to return to the Pete Carroll days. But if they are able to outspend teams, it really feels like we have a lot of USC versus Oregon or Washington in our future. The NCAA dragging their feet and forcing players to get paid from outside the schools is really going to hurt teams without large boosters. And with how long they take to move, I can't imagine anything being resolved anytime soon. Am I wrong with the way I am looking at all of this? If this is the way it goes for the foreseeable future, which Pac-12 teams do you believe will benefit the most and which will be hurt the most? Thanks for all you both do, Clay in Phoenix.
Thanks, Clay. Sorry you're disappointed there. So according to Cartman, Arizona State is putting together a collective now. So like they actually are doing this. So it's not like that, you know, all hope is lost for that. But the biggest factor isn't NIL. It's the scandal and the way it's being handled by the powers that be, which sucks because you're delaying this and it's just making it worse and worse. So the longer you go without firing them and firing Ray Anderson, the longer this goes on, basically you're not admitting that there's a problem.
Right.
You're like, we haven't hit rock bottom yet. Yes, you have. Unfortunately, it can get worse. I guess you haven't hit rock bottom, but you're digging into the rock. But the NIL stuff, I think the Pac-12 is just going to be a little slower, but they'll do stuff. And yeah, there's reasons to stay on the West Coast. As long as you have something, if Auburn is going to offer some kid from Long Beach $100,000 and Arizona State was offering him like $70,000, like, I don't think that's going to be a difference maker, you know?
Uh-uh.
But if there's a huge disparity, then that could be the case. So ASU is putting their collective together. I literally haven't heard anything about USC putting a collective together. UCLA is trying to, they're doing
some stuff.
Yeah. I think Washington.
I think USC and UCLA, because as much as there are differences in many different ways, I think they operate kind of similarly in how they go about like compliance related issues a lot of times.
It's like
I don't know that UCLA's is ever going to be public. Like, I don't know if they're going to be publicizing the way that idiot in Miami is doing it, you know? And I don't know that USC will either. Like, I think they'll be doing stuff and they're going to tell the recruits that they're doing stuff, but I don't know if they're going to be like, hey, we've got the USC Caruso, collective. I think for UCLA, it will always be to an extent behind the scenes, and I would imagine it'll be similar for USC.
Yeah. Yeah, that Miami one is like insane.
Nuts. The weird part is it's already blowing back on him because of the obvious problem, which is if you're completely transparent with the deals you're creating and you're not giving everyone the same thing, you're going to have guys competing against each other for the money.
Yeah.
Complete transparency with this is the same reason a lot of employers don't do wage transparency, because you don't want to know how much your coworker, you don't want the plebs to know how much the other plebs are making, because then they're going to say, I want that amount of money.
Right. And sometimes it's different, you know, it's more of a, this guy came from another company or this woman came from another company and we had to pay her more to get her here, but she's doing the same job or he's doing the same job as someone that's already here that we didn't have to pay more to get them, you know? So
right. you're going to have cost. I mean, it's wages. You're going to have like COL adjustments and stuff. Like, there's going to be, you know, do I get a raise every year? Cause the cost of this is going up.
Yeah.
It's all going to be very interesting, but,
the booster aspect too is like, so I forget which, I was reading another article on this and they didn't change the booster. Like, if you're a booster, you're not supposed to be giving prospects money. So even if it's like an NIL thing, like, that's still like a thing, you know? And this guy's like a big booster and like advertising, giving money. Like, so there's still like, I think there's some rules that are forgotten, but are being broken. And they're like, just because it's NIL doesn't mean, but the problem is like if you like went to a school, like, you're considered a booster. So like anyone that went to UCLA or whatever.
Well, I think all those rules are there. They've been invalidated by the NIL rules, because the NIL is so permissive that you can read it as essentially, invalidating almost every single regulation against paying players that came before
it. Gotcha. Okay.
I think the reality is, it's what I was saying before. I mean, there is still hometown value. Now you do have to give them something, and I think ASU will eventually get to the point where they're giving them something. But the reason you're losing a bunch of players, I mean, you would be losing them at the level you're losing them if you were not a dysfunctional program.
Right.
So I guess on the flip side, Clay, all it takes to suddenly be a functional program again is to fire that joker and get a new one. And the new coach will be able to say, hey, we're functional. Like, do you think Arizona has like a huge NIL collective. They might have a decent one, but do they have a huge one? No, it's Arizona. But they're not losing players in droves. They're bringing in guys constantly because fundamentally, I think there's big deals going on and there's guys who are getting a good amount of money. But for most people, it's, you know, can I get 10 grand here or not? Or, and is that going to be the determining factor, or is it going to be whether I can play?
Yeah.
And whether I can play a lot and whether I can show myself for the NFL where the real money happens. And I think at this level, that's still what's happening. And I, at some point, there's going to be a come to Jesus for some of these booster types who are crazy, obviously, all of them. But it's not like every single school has a billionaire who's like ready to just funnel money into this like it's his, you know, professional team. There is no ROI for these guys aside from the simple enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
And so
this might go away.
They're not cutting into the revenue. So, I'm shelling out like whatever it is. I'm shelling out $5 million a year, $10 million a year to, fuel up the football team with talent. And I'm not getting anything besides what I was already getting by being a booster. I'm not doing this anymore.
Right. This might be like, I've never been able to do this before.
And yeah, it's exciting and it's new and all this other stuff. But then when it doesn't immediately translate into wins because college football recruiting is a crapshoot, well, then where are you?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's going to settle at some point, and that point, I think, is going to be essentially players getting sort of baseline salary at every school. And, you know, ASU might be a $40,000 a year school, but you know, Auburn, to your point, is like an $80,000 a year school. Okay, yeah. Well, is that going to determine it, or do you want to stay on the West Coast? You know, and so it might become more important for schools to recruit locally and, you know, really soak up the talent in your neck of the woods so that, you know, guys are more predisposed to stay around.
Yeah. All right. Well, great stuff. We had some extra questions there at the end that I didn't even know we had, so perfect.
It was beautiful.
It was very nice. We got to decide what we're going to do going forward. I was thinking, run this by you.
Run
we
by
could
me.
Do like a deep dive once a week, you know, in a different team, you know. We've done like kind of a post-spring, hey, where's the state of this team right now? You know, the transfer portal date has passed. There's still going to be guys transferring in. Should be less guys transferring out because if you transfer out now, apparently, though, the waiver process is pretty easy. So we might see some guys transfer out and just get a waiver and be able to play right away anyway, from what I've been hearing. But I don't know. Any thoughts on...
Let's do it.
We could do it?
Let's do it, baby.
You're always the planner. You know, you always think of stuff to do.
I'm really good at it.
He does walk in at 9 o'clock and say, hey, I need to defile your bathroom. And by the way, what are we talking about? What work did you do to
prepare? I didn't do that. I defiled your bathroom. And then as I was walking out of the bathroom to begin recording, I asked, what are we talking about?
Okay.
I didn't go in there thinking about it. Like, I didn't go in and sit on the toilet and say, okay, I'm going to have 5 minutes now to think about this. No. I waited until I was out of the toilet to come to you and say, hey, what are we talking about? So there was less prep. I didn't want to give people the wrong impression there.
Nice. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. Yeah. Send us any ideas and stuff you have. Hope everyone has a wonderful Cinco de Mayo and a great weekend. Hope you enjoyed the show.
Celebrate the anniversary of the Battle of Puebla, which did not in any way end a war.
Yes. It's a good reason to celebrate.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next time.